Welcome to Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains. I'm Corby Skinner.
And I'm Jennifer Corning, and we're sharing stories of creative people who live and work in the Intermountain West. Chamber music has enchanted listeners since the Middle Ages. While the style has evolved over time, certain elements remain unchanged. This music of friends is intimate and connects the musicians to one another and their audience. We're in Bozeman today at the home of Angela Ahn, the artistic director of Montana Chamber Music. She is joined by Renee Westlake, the president of that board, to tell us how music is made in Montana.
Renee and Angela, welcome to Resounds. You were both instrumental, isn't that a funny word to describe the two of you, but you were very vital and important to the Montana Chamber Music. Well, I've known you both for a long time. I think, Angela, we were talking about 30 plus years that we have known each other. But I also want to tell the listeners that I am a proud member of the board. I'm taking no salary. I am just glad to be a part of this great organization. Let's start from the beginning. Angela, what defines chamber music?
That's a really important question. Chamber music, in my opinion, is different from every other kind of chamber music or other kind of music. Of course, chamber music literally means music in a room, the way it was historically performed in a small room, mostly probably even just amateurs getting together and playing music together, or the composer getting the composer's friends together and reading things. But what I think about chamber music that's different from any other kind is the intimacy and the closeness. It is like having a conversation with your best friends, almost in secret, except you get the whole audience to also engage with you and be in this very secret conversation. So that's what differentiates chamber music, in my opinion, is the conversational aspect of it and the very intimacy. That's a huge part of it.
Renee, you have been involved with every music group in Bozeman, I think, for a long time. I know you were very involved with the symphony. I'm wondering if you can tell us, what is that audience experience that is different with a chamber music concert and a symphonic concert?
I think the biggest thing about chamber music is that the audience is there to be entertained with symphony music. And when I was a part of the Montana Ballet Company, they're there to be entertained by the dancers. Our chamber audiences come to participate. And they participate as listeners, but they also participate as a part of the music. If it's something that's new to them, a lot of them will have studied it before they come. And so I think that's the biggest difference to me, is that they're more of a participant than coming to just be entertained.
I know originally we had the title Montana Chamber Music Society, and we dropped that because we thought that sounded society, just seemed sort of, but you could almost call it Montana Music of Friends because of the intimacy. Would you agree with that?
I would definitely agree. Chamber music is, I think, asks for the friendship. For example, although I played in a trio for many years with my two sisters, any group that plays together for more than just a few hours, I mean, it literally becomes this incredibly close, intimate relationship. I was thinking about this the other day with all of our incredible artists that come to Montana. There is always this connection. There's a connection to New York City, where I came from, or there's a connection to Juilliard, or it's somebody that I know, their friend. It is such a close network of people that have the same values, which is taking music, whether it's new or old, and making that your own and then sharing it. I think that's the other part of it, is because it's so much about sharing and the love and the connection. And that's why I think, yes, I think it can be called chamber music, music of friends. Definitely.
The other thing that I really appreciate with chamber music, Renee, I saw some of the great chamber quartets in the world. I have presented them at the Albert Aubert Theater, and I'm not going to name names, but four men came out, world famous, and they never said a word. They performed beautifully, bowed, and left. I just was so disappointed. What is it about that conversation that happens in chamber music? And can you tell us some examples of artists that you've had and that kind of conversation they have with the audience?
I think that the Muir Quartet was my introduction to chamber music that actually connects with the audience and talks to them. They talk to them about the music. They talk to them about their instruments. They talk to them about their experiences. Angela and her sisters talked to the audience. They made us part of what they did. I cannot think of any group that we have had since I've been involved. And I've been involved in some way since 2014, because I developed the New Notes program, and I was on the board at that time. And part of what Angela does with our musicians is she talks to them about the importance of not only communicating through their music, but to communicate who they are, what they love, and what they appreciate about being in an area of Montana, whether it's in Wilsall or Bozeman, whether it's in Lewistown or wherever it is, whether it's a little place or a big place. I also want to say we have a rural outreach program, and last summer, Angela and Julie Goswiller actually played in a little church in a teeny, teeny little Montana town. And my husband and I traveled to be there. And they made friends with the audience through their music. And it's why I think when a chamber group comes out and doesn't talk to the audience, there is a piece of chamber music maybe missing.
Which begs the question, what makes up a chamber music ensemble? I think a lot of people know a quartet, they know a trio, but chamber music can be a variety of things. Angela, can you tell us about what is the instrumentation? What is sort of how it comes together and what defines it?
Probably the biggest difference in chamber music groups, is that there is no conductor. So it can be any instrumentation. It could be two violins, or it could be two violins and a viola and a cello, or it could be piano and a horn instrument. I mean, it could literally be anything. Even we brought a piece by Copland a few years ago. We toured Montana with it, and it's a very famous piece called Appalachian Spring, but without a conductor makes it chamber music, even though it's 13 musicians. So really, it is all about how the musicians communicate. It takes eye contact and body movement to communicate it, but especially you're literally breathing together, like as one. And I think that is the biggest difference. There is no one leading you. You're all leaders, every single person playing in this group.
I'm just realizing why the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra is called the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra. There's no conductor, even though it's a small orchestra.
Right. So,
let's have a little bit of history. Renee, when was it started? Who started it? How long ago? Tell us a little background about the Montana Chamber Music.
I think I can get all of this right. In 1987, the Muir String Quartet, which was started by Peter Zasofsky, who is on our board, and Mike Reynolds, who I played with in high school. In 87, Mike Reynolds and Peter Zasofsky had co-founded the Muir String Quartet, and they came to Bozeman to do a summer festival. And they brought a bunch of their friends, and it became just a wonderful event. And then in 2012, Dennis Wentz was the founding president of Montana Chamber Music Society at that time. And society is something that we eliminated a few years ago because it was kind of an elite term, and we're not elite. We are for every human. And so that happened in 2012. And Dennis Wentz and Lauren Acton, the astronaut, and Marty Lambert and Mike Reynolds, and there were several others, they started an actual nonprofit after the summer festival had happened for several years. So 2012 is when it was formed. And then in 2014, there was even an increase in programming. And it was basically surrounding the Muir Quartet and their ability to come and work with audiences. So that's the beginning.
Angela, you are the artistic director now. How long have you been in that position?
I have been in the position of artistic director for 5 years. And the history on that is when I moved to Bozeman in 2009, I met Mike Reynolds, of course, and he was so excited because I think the music world is so small. We knew of each other, but he was excited that I was moving here. He invited me to perform with the Muir Quartet multiple times, and we did many different programs together. And he called me, I believe, during COVID, and he said, would you consider taking over as the artistic director? It makes sense because you live here. I live in Boston. And I have to say, I had to think about it for a minute. You know, Mike Reynolds' shoes are really big ones to fill. There's such a legacy with his family. I mean, his parents were musicians, and what Mike developed, bringing music, his music, the quartet's music, to Bozeman regularly. And so I thought about it, and then I said yes, because, of course, my passion is chamber music. And to be in a role where I can perform and also invite artists that I absolutely love and to share them with the Montana community is, I mean, it's a dream come true for me. So that was about 5 years ago.
So this organization is more than just concert hall performances. Since I have been involved, the organization has expanded so much. Tell us about some of those programs that you've been doing.
Well, we have our summer festival, which is very important because that's how it started. And Angela has taken what the Muir Quartet did, and she has just helped it to explode into a wonderful summer program that reaches so many rural areas in Montana. Secondly, we have season series. And currently we have expanded to 5. And a season series is an event where guest artists come in. They do one big concert at Reynolds Recital Hall. They do one intimate event in a home or a business where about 50 people can get together and just really engage with the artists. Third, we do a seminar for our music students at MSU. Fourth, they do a clinic for high school and sometimes middle school students. And fifth, they do one rural outreach concert. If it's the dead of winter, we don't drive them very far, but we do go to places like Whitehall and Cardwell and Wilsall and Big Timber. So we don't always go really far in the cold times, but that makes up a series. Number three, we do noon notes, and we used to call it noon notes at the library, but it's expanded. We do noon notes at the Bozeman Public Library on the first Monday of the month between October and May. And then the first Tuesday of the month, we do several at the Shane Center in Livingston. And that is a multi-generational program where we work with senior citizens, many of them on a fixed income, and young elementary students. We send them a study guide beforehand, and then they meet the musicians, and they already have a lot of questions to ask because they've studied the music with their teachers beforehand, and now the senior citizens ask for the study guide. And lastly, Angela brought to us a woman who has developed what's called petite concerts, and it's for infants, toddlers, and preschoolers to experience music in a very interactive way. They even have a program that a three-year-old can look at the pictures and know what's coming next. So that's where we've expanded.
Angela, I'm a program director like you are. I pay an enormous amount of money to bring artists into the Alberta Bear Theater, and I also know the budget of the Montana Chamber Music. It's not quite the same. How do you lure musicians to Montana, for one, and then how do you put together a season and pick what artist that you're going to present?
One of the best things about living in Montana, and especially Bozeman, is it is easy to get musicians that want to come here. We live in the most beautiful place. We have the most incredible and open audience. Just by the musicians, and I was talking before about how small that network of musician world is, by them talking to each other, it makes it so much easier for me to invite other musicians that I might not even know because they've already heard about what an amazing time some of these musicians have had. Through my Juilliard connections, through the touring around the world connections, because that network of musicians is so small, I've had a really amazingly easy time getting musicians to come. And then, of course, once they come, once they experience the beauty and the warmth of our communities, they just cannot wait to come back. And what's also really wonderful is that these musicians, and I think this is something that all musicians kind of share in common, they love connecting more than anything else. I mean, of course, they love playing their instruments, but they love connecting. And so having such an open community that just literally hangs on every word through their instruments is really magical for them. And so it's a really wonderful way to, I think, build a community to have this sharing experience. So I think we're very lucky. We really have musicians that want to come, that love to come, and that are willing to come. Most of our musicians, especially when I was starting out, would come for just one concert fee, but then they would do four different outreach activities. And that's just because what they're most passionate about is sharing their art.
I have to add to that, having an artistic director in a very small organization like this, who is a world-class artist herself, those connections that Angela has to the musicians around the world that are willing to come for a song. We don't pay them a lot. We show them a great time, but we don't pay them a lot. I think the fact that we have a world-class artist as an artistic director makes all the difference.
If truth be told, Angela, I know you well enough, and part of the reason you bring in these fabulous artists is you get to play with them. Is that not true?
Definitely true.
So this show will run shortly before you start a summer tour. Generally, we don't do promotional things for artists or concerts or symphony, but the timing is right, and we'll run this program. Tell us about what's coming up in July, that exciting tour, because you're traveling all over the state.
We are so excited this summer to bring back Peter Zuzovsky, who is not only an incredible violinist, but almost like my music mentor. I have the greatest respect for Peter. And in fact, when I was given my first sabbatical year from Montana State University, I went to Boston to study with Peter for a year. I mean, this is how highly I think of Peter. So he will be coming back of the Muir Quartet. Michelle Levin, who is the most beautiful pianist. She has this incredible story of going to Curtis when she was only 14 years old. And now she's about 82 or 83 and can outplay any pianist out there. Although Michelle always jokes that she can actually move her fingers on the piano faster than she can walk. Which is amazing. Michelle will be coming back. Sarah Stelnaker, beautiful cellist from Boston, will be coming. I have a dear friend, David Harding, who I've known for years, who he's coming to join us. And we have a new bass player who plays in the Knights, and the schedule allowed him to be with us. We needed a bass player because we're going to be performing and taking around Montana Schubert's Trout Piano Quintet, which is such an iconic piece. And it's I can't believe we haven't played it in Montana until now. It's the Trout Quintet. And this is a piece that Schubert wrote based on a song that had and a poem with the trout. So it's just one movement of it. It sort of depicts the trout, but it's just the most beautiful and joyous piece. We'll be also playing Dvorak American Quartet, string quartet. We kind of thought it would be a really wonderful piece to pair with the trout. With there are all these bird sounds and these beautiful depictions of America in the Dvorak American Quartet. We're going to be actually playing also one movement of Florence Price's string quartet. Inspired by just beauty of our surroundings and wanting to include a piece that is so important in a culture of being inclusive and connectivity. So that's our program. We have a fun little piece for bass and piano just to really show off our incredible bass player. So it's going to be, there's going to be something in that program for everyone, and we're just very excited about it.
I can't wait to see the poster for the Trout Quartet in Montana. Where's Monty Dolak when we need him, right? So, Renee, tell us, where are all these concerts going to be this year?
Well, and I have to tell you that a Montana photographer has done the poster. I mean, we have a graphic designer, but a Montana photographer has done a Montana scene. We will be going just past Anaconda to Georgetown Lake, just a gorgeous setting, right on the lake in St. Timothy's Memorial Chapel. We are going to be going way east to Lewistown, and we'll be playing at the American Prairie Discovery Center. We will be going to Great Falls, and that is a new location for us to perform in a beautiful history museum. We're going to be playing in Belgrade, Montana. Used to be a small town, but it's really growing. And we'll be playing at a very beautiful church there. And then we'll be ending in Bozeman, not only with the fabulous musicians, but with our Young Artist Award winners from last year who will be performing this year.
And Angela, is there anything else you want to tell us about?
My favorite activity other than playing the violin is sharing music. And I got to witness something so extraordinary in April. We had Caroline Shaw with Ataka Quartet in our community for a few days. And of course, every concert was unbelievable. And I literally told Caroline and the members of the quartet that I feel like everything I've done in my life, playing the violin, going to Juilliard, being in a piano trio, touring the world, was kind of to lead to this event because it was that touching and that moving. But what I want to tell you is we brought Caroline Shaw and the members of the quartet to Montfortin School here in Bozeman. And I got to witness Caroline, the members of the quartet, and over 100 fourth graders create a song together. It was the most incredible experience of my life. The fourth graders totally participated. They picked out the key. They picked out the lyrics. There were strawberries and ants and a ship and a battle. And Caroline turned it into a song. And the quartet made the music with the kids. And they played the whole song together. And I mean, just talking about it gives me goosebumps. And that's what gets me so excited about sharing music, is the connections like those.
What a wonderful story and a perfect example of what chamber music is all about. Renee and Angela, thank you for being on Resounds. We'll have more information on our website about the summer tour and links to the website. So thank you so much for being.
You've been listening to Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains, produced by Corby Skinner, Jennifer Corning, and Ken Siebert for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music by Alex Nauman. Hear this program anytime online at ypradio.org.